high and life worth living.
Now that's my old pal, Susan Boyle from Britain's Got Talent, singing I Dreamed a Dream. Remember, she was on the programme shortly after and before her musical came out. And a fantastic guest she was too, and what a brilliant show. And I have to say, I really do appreciate and admire Susan Boyle. And I mean appreciate her, because the world would be a duller place without her. I do believe that.
When dreams were made and used and wasted.
But anyway, what do you think Susan Boyle could possibly have in common with philosopher Socrates, physicist Albert Einstein, and naturalist Charles Darwin? Any idea? Or, for that matter, with actress Daryl Hannah, singer Courtney Love, and possibly, and I say possibly, the artist Andy Warhol? Well, all of these people are, or are believed to have been, somewhat on the autism spectrum. Yesterday was World Autism Awareness Day, and we learned how many people living on this spectrum go on to achieve great things. Michael Fitzgerald is Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin, and he's co-author of Unstoppable Brilliance, Irish Geniuses and Asperger Syndrome. In this, he's written about how many of the most notable people in Irish life exhibited traits of Asperger syndrome. People such as Samuel Beckett, Eamon de Valera, Robert Emmett, James Joyce, Porrick Pierce and W.B. Yeats. Later in the programme, we'll be speaking to Pat Matthews. He's Executive Director of the Irish Society for Autism. And we'll be meeting 15-year-old Murray Hooley and his autism assistance dog, Clive. But first, Fiona O'Leary has a unique insight into life for someone living with Asperger's. She's travelled all the way from Bantry to our Cork studio to talk to us. So good afternoon, Fiona. Welcome to the programme. Will you begin by telling me your story, please?
Basically, I'm a mum to five children. Mm-hmm. And two of my children have autism. I have a 21-year-old son, and his name is Dylan. And I have a 9-year-old boy called Vito, and he was diagnosed when he was 8 with Asperger's. I myself was diagnosed with Asperger's last year at the age of 42.
42?
Yes. Yeah. And this came about really, I started the Autism Spectrum Studies course in UCC, and I've nearly finished that now. And it was really through the studies that I discovered my own diagnosis. And that was aided by the help of my wonderful lecturer, Kirsten Hurley, who is actually lecturing the course and coordinating it. And it was just really through one of her lectures that I realised, you know, that I too was on the spectrum, and I sought a diagnosis, and I was diagnosed in November last year.
And so what was it that made you think, oh, I think I'm on the spectrum, I think I have autism myself?
My whole life, I mean, I have had issues myself, you know, from early childhood and around social problems and anxiety and things like that. And I just knew that I was different, and that there was things, you know, that I found difficult to do in my life.
Can you give me an example? Because we could all relate to difficulties as we're growing up and going through life. That there's some things we can do, there's some things we can... Like, I mean, I'm a very antisocial individual.
Okay. Well,
despite what I do for a living, I am very antisocial.
Yeah, well...
Does that mean I'm on the spectrum?
It could do. I mean, it doesn't... for me, it would be socially. I would have had big issues with trying to interact with my peers. So, I mean, maybe from the age of 8 or 9 or 10... I found it difficult to, you know, to interact with other girls and in school. And because girls do present very differently to males on the spectrum, we can mimic and we can mask our symptoms a lot more, which in turn can lead to other problems, which it did for me. So I developed an eating disorder when I was a teenager. And that was kind of a coping mechanism, really, to help me cope with the stresses I was feeling. But I had terrible anxiety problems, Derek, and I did get depression, very bad depression. Mm-hmm. And but I was never actually diagnosed, really, with anything, you know, clinical or anything like that. And I just felt that I couldn't fit in, or I couldn't really be myself. And so the eating disorder, the social pressure and the anxiety was always there from forever, you know, for as long as I can remember. And when my own children were diagnosed, you know, I didn't think that I could have it myself, because females weren't really being diagnosed then, and they still aren't, you know. And that's why I'm really here today, because it is very hard to get a diagnosis if you are a female.
And, why?
Because basically the diagnostic criteria is kind of male-based, and because women are presenting differently, they might not appear to be, you know, on the spectrum the same way that a man is or a male is. So, I mean, the eye contact might be better, they might be able to communicate better, these things. And they're not really being diagnosed.
But that's not to say that females cannot be diagnosed.
No, they can. They can, yeah. I mean, but I mean, it's not as easy to get a diagnosis. Like, for me, you know, when I went to my GP, it wouldn't have been something that they would have said, oh, don't be silly, you know, kind of being nice about it. But the truth is, if you don't get a diagnosis, you're left confused your whole life, wondering, you know, why you're having problems coping. I mean, with my support group now, I have on Facebook, there's 180 women. And I mean, they have all gone through similar situations as that I have. And some of them are still trying to get a diagnosis. There is a woman that's 70 in my group that was diagnosed at that age in her life. So, I mean, it's an area that really needs to be looked at, you know.
Can I ask you a question? Now, this is going to sound totally ignorant.
Yeah, no.
So, therefore, I'm going to apologise for what I'm about to say. Did you feel you needed a label? I mean, does it matter at 42 years of age if you're able to get through life, despite all of the difficulties you might have had, but you were coping very well and you're doing okay, and this other lady who you say is 70, and she's managed to get through, why put a label on it?
Well, it's not that we're coping very well. I'm not coping very well. I cope, but it's harder for me to do that. I mean, you know, I can go out there and I can talk and communicate, but I'm still having anxiety issues. You know, everything I do has a strategy base to it, you know, how I'm going to do that. I rehearse that as well. You know, if I have to go somewhere like today, that takes a lot of effort for me and a lot of planning and a lot of, you know, focus and just, you know, to concentrate on that. So I don't think women are coping very well, just to correct you on that. I think we can appear
to
cope.
That's why I'm apologising. For my ignorance, I'm just trying to wonder, like, if I was somebody turned around tomorrow, let's say I did a test and I might ask you a little bit about the test and discovered, oh, I'm on the autistic scale. That would explain a lot to me. Okay. But I would kind of say to myself, well, so what?
I don't think the label, in a sense, is the big issue here. You know, we're still who we are underneath it all. But I mean, to get services and supports, you need to have a label. You know, if you have a child with difficulties and they get a diagnosis of Asperger's.
Yes, no, I totally appreciate that and I understand that. But
same for me as well.
Is
I mean,
it? But what kind of support do you need?
Well, counselling, you know, things to talk about my, you know, to get maybe occupational therapy, which I would love, you know, to have better interpersonal skills and stuff socially so that I can, you know, for work situations, that I'd be able to deal with that better and things like that. So no, I do think the label does benefit you in that regard, but you don't have to tell everybody. It's up to you who you tell.
Absolutely.
You know, the only reason I went out publicly was I want women to have more support, and I want women not to be afraid to talk about these issues, because it is a serious issue, and I think that it's not all negative either. You know, I'm here today to be quite positive about autism, you know, in the month that we're talking with awareness.
And that's very important to be positive, and to look on the positive side. Yeah. So did you ever see a therapist when you were a child?
I did, many times. I was in therapy a lot, you know, for my eating disorder, for anxiety issues, for depression. And I mean, nobody ever really, like I said, found, you know, a proper diagnosis for me. And I think it was because I was always on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's a very hard thing to detect. And I think that, you know, if you're not really trained in that field, I mean, the course that I'm doing now is the first course in Ireland, you know, in autism studies. And I mean, it's a very in-depth, knowledgeable course that is meant to go to a degree level, hopefully. And I hope that, you know, that this will, you know, educate people more, because autism is a very broad subject and it affects everyone in a different way, you know.
And it is a very broad spectrum.
Yeah, oh, it's huge.
It really is. No, I have members of my own family now who are on that spectrum, so I have some understanding
of
the autism spectrum. Yeah. But I'm also totally ignorant to the daily lives of people who are living with, would you say, living with this condition?
Yeah.
Is that okay to say that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I love the word condition. It's much better than disorder. And I mean, lots of people want to change the ASD to ASC for, you know, because it is a way of being. And I think that condition is a really healthy word. I'm very, you know, I find language is very important, Derek, when we're describing autism, and that we need to look at it in a more positive way and try and accept that people who are different, you know, haven't got a disorder, you know, that they do have a lot of strengths, and autistic people do. And we need to focus on those strengths more, I feel, you know, even though there are difficulties there, get the supports, but highlight the strengths that these people have, you know.
So when you were going to therapy when you were a child, was autism ever mentioned, do you recall?
Not the word, but I mean, one therapist did mention my eye contact being very poor, you know, and I had a child already diagnosed with autism at the time. And, you know, she was kind of maybe thinking
that. No, I'm talking about when you were a child.
No, autism back then in the 70s, you know, is a completely different time, you know, and I suppose, you know, it was a different, whole completely different process to now. You know, it's only really becoming, the knowledge of autism is only becoming more aware now, you know. I mean, in the last 10 years, I'd say things have really changed for autism, you know. But back when I was a child, no, never mentioned, no.
Never mentioned. So no. Your own children then, when you say you have two children, one is 21 and the other is?
He's nine, yeah.
He's nine, yeah. So what signs were they giving off that made you think, I think they might have autism?
Knew.
Or did it even cross your mind?
Oh, yeah, it did. When, I mean, my son was born in 92 and my sister would have had a child 2 months prior, and mm-hmm. the difference was, you know, it was amazing, really. And I was interested in psychology myself, but I mean, I could just, his eye contact was poor. He had very classic, you know, signs of autism, you know, like canner. You know, all everything was like almost textbook for him. And
now explain that to me, Canner. What's
well,
that?
Well, Canner is Canner is the professor that would have, you know, who basically brought autism to the fore. You know, he's a psychologist, so Leo Canner would have been, you know, discovered autism really. And you know, from his findings and from his literature, my son would have been fitting into all those kind of things. You know, the spinning, the rocking, the flapping of the hands, and he used to headbang and stuff like that. He was quite upset, quite, you know, just not in touch with me at all. And I went to the doctor and I raised my concerns. They thought he had hearing problems initially. Then he had a series of tests, and he was diagnosed when he was around 2.5 with classic autism and a learning disability as well. And you know, I took that diagnosis and I just, you know, did my best with him, and I always followed him. You know, I never thought that Dylan would have to be changed in any way. I'd have to support him but not change him, because I really think autism is a part of the person. You know, you're not like it's not separate from you. You're autistic, and your personality and everything is wrapped up in that too. So it's very important to be positive and, you know, encourage that child to be themselves.
Absolutely,
in their natural state.
Yeah.
But I think that we've a tendency to go the opposite way in thinking we have to fix them, they're broken, you know, they're disordered, whatever. It doesn't help. And my son is doing brilliantly now. I mean, he's talking. They told me he'd never talk. He did. They told me a lot of negative things. And I mean, I really, really just believed in him. And I helped him, you know, with language, with all those kind of things. And he did really well. My second son isn't getting the best supports now, because the cutbacks are making it a lot harder for parents. You know, there isn't as much, I feel, not as much services now as there was back then, you know. And so those kind of things are very important. But for me, you know, it wasn't a death sentence. It wasn't something that was really negative. You know, I never looked at him as having a disability. I thought he was amazing because he saw things in a different way. And I used to watch him in the garden, and I found him fascinating. But maybe because I'm on the spectrum, I felt that as well, you know. But I never, you know, I had a lot of people saying, isn't it terrible? Oh, you poor thing. You know, it's the cross you have to bear. The comments were unbelievable, and I just ignored them all, Derek, and I just embraced Dylan.
But you know what? I think you're dead right to ignore the negative comments and get on with your own life and do the best you can for your children. And that's the important thing, and treat them as normally as you would expect anybody else's child to be treated, because that's what... And, you know, it's people's ignorance. As I said, I'm quite ignorant about it myself. It's people's ignorance that causes a lot of difficulty. Yeah. But when help is and intervention is required, the facility should be there and provided for by the state. All this nonsense they go on with looking after the children and all that equally, and then when you need somebody looked after, there's not enough money. I never understand it. Pay banks, but don't look after ourselves. Anyway, listen, so you were diagnosed at 42. Can I ask you, was there any other members of your immediate family when you were growing up, or any your parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles that had autism that you're aware of? And do you think it's genetic?
I do think it's genetic. I mean, my two children have autism. I have a brother, a half-brother actually, who has Asperger's. So, I mean, I do think there is a genetic factor there. And looking back into my own family tree, I could probably, you know, think, yes, maybe my grandfather actually. And there's other members of my family that I've mentioned, other relatives too. But I mean, you know, if it is genetic, I mean, wherever it comes from, the most important thing I think for us is to focus on the now and focus on the future for autism as well. And I think, you know, awareness is very important, but acceptance is paramount. You know, that we need to accept difference in society across the board for every group. And I feel that I have a big problem, you know, with negative language, as I mentioned earlier, you know. And there are some organisations who are using highly negative language in regard to autism. That needs to change, because autistic people are being hurt by this language, the way they're being described as a disorder, as something that has no future or no hope. You know, if you're autistic and you're living in the community and you have that kind of, you know, you're referred to in that fashion, it makes you feel like you aren't worth anything. And, I mean, it could lead to severe depression and severe, you know, I don't know what other problems, but it's not a healthy way to go.
No, it is not. Now, talk to me about the bio bank.
Yeah.
I mentioned banks a moment ago, but it's a different type of bank.
It's a completely...
This is a good bank.
Well, I don't know if it's a good bank
well,
either.
Well, it will be. Go on, tell me.
Well, I mean, it's a registry in a biobank that Trinity College Dublin and the NUIG and Autism Speaks, they're an American organisation, are partnering up with, trying to basically set up a registry and a biobank. A registry is a good idea, I feel, to, you know, to account the number of people in Ireland that have autism, so that we can kind of get a picture on how to support these people in a positive way. The biobank biobank then would involve taking DNA samples for research. Now, I'm all for research if it's for helping and for, you know, supporting autistic people again. I don't see autism as a disease. I have to say that I don't need to be cured. My children don't need to be cured. We're not ill. This is my point. You know, we have a condition that makes us, you know, behave or you know, perceive the world differently, but we don't need to be cured.
Yeah. No, but you say it's genetic as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'm saying that this is what they're saying.
No, no, but don't you believe that there's a genetic component?
I do believe
so
that.
So if you could find an intervention that would switch off that gene, you know, and the autism would disappear, go, whatever, would you not be happy with that?
No.
Would you rather live with autism? Would you rather your two sons live on the autistic spectrum?
They are who they are, yes.
No, I know that. You would not, if there was nothing like, I don't know what to compare it to, you know what I mean? But if somebody had a broken leg or if they were incapacitated in some way, they had had an accident and they had a spinal injury, if that could be corrected, surely they would say, well, I would like that corrected. They were born and they were incapacitated, they were disabled, you know, they would want to be able-bodied, no?
But that's different completely, Derek. And I mean, if you look at all the great people in the world who have autism, like Temple Grandin, and you know, what they can do in the field of engineering and technology and what they bring.
Yes, I know, but as you say, it's a spectrum.
It is a spectrum.
People can do things and others can't.
I know. Well,
but that's normal life as well.
Yeah, I think everyone can do something, even the more severely affected. I still think they can. And a lot of nonverbal autistic people who communicate through writing will say that they're happy being autistic and they have things to give. You know, I think we can't, you know, speak for those people.
You're not happy with the way media portrays people with Asperger's syndrome, are you?
I'm not. Well, I suppose, you know, with the Rain Man movie, which was the big kind of movie, you know, that kind of, you know, put that out there, you know, because Asperger's or autism, you know, there is a spectrum, and I think the media kind of focus a lot on the, you know, what they, this amazing ability they have, savant ability, or then the very severe. We need to find a balance, you know, like with The Bridge, you know, this new detective drama. I mean, the Americanized version of that, the woman, the actress in it, actually based her role on an Asperger's male instead of a woman, which I found shocking because, I mean, you know, to get a really proper, you know, account of somebody with Asperger's or autism, you know, to have a female base her role on a male doesn't make sense to me, you know. I just think that there needs to be more of a balance in the media, especially around photographs as well. And, you know, the pictures that are put up there with children trapped behind windows and that, you know, we need to move forward. My children don't look like that. They're not looking through panes of glass with their hands and their eyes
wide. So you say to the media, cop on.
Yeah, cop on and, you know, just maybe have a more positive image. We have so much negative images and stories with autism, but there are happy moments too, you know, that we need to highlight.
By the way, do you think the portrayal of what's his name, the actor in Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
You think that was a negative portrayal of somebody?
I don't think it was a negative portrayal. I mean, I actually think that he was a very good actor, you know, and I just think that it's just the savant thing again, you know, that he had this ability, and some do, you know, they have that ability, but it's not very common, you know, it's quite rare. And I suppose it would be great to make a movie which had, like, just, I suppose, just somebody, you know, just living autism every day in a kind of a balanced way, you know, not having it too, you know, having the whole thing. Maybe make a movie with everybody, you know, showing everybody. It's very black and white.
The reason I ask you, do you think it was negative? Because I've never seen the movie.
Haven't you? It's a good movie.
But then I've never seen a full episode of The Simpsons either, so there's nothing new in that.
All right.
And I go to the movies all the time, but it wasn't a movie that particularly appealed to me, if I'm to be honest. I mean, I don't put, Dustin Hoffman isn't top of my list of actors when I want to go and see a film, whereas Gene Hackman would be.
Okay.
But at any rate, I have never heard a single individual say a bad word about anybody who's autistic after seeing that film.
Mm.
In fact, all I've heard is, God, your man was fantastic. It was brilliant, terrific. Imagine being able to do that. Mm. You know, it was all positive, positive, positive.
It is, but I suppose if you are on the spectrum and then, you know, you can't do that, you know, like someone will say, oh, you've got Asperger's, they might say to you, oh, can you do this amazing things? Because they get kind of an incorrect, you know, account. So, I mean, we need to, it's fine to have those movies. And it was a very good film. And I really enjoyed the movie. It's just the fact that we need to have a balance, I suppose.
No, I accept that. But it's probably the first time it brought it out there into the open and said, here is a person who's on the autism spectrum and this is what they can do.
It's
I'm just
good,
wondering how that... Can I ask you another question now?
Yeah.
I don't want you getting upset with me or annoyed
with
me.
No, I'm fine. We're grand, Derek.
Verbal jousting on the air.
No.
Thankfully, you're in Cork. You can't hit me.
No.
But because you're on the autistic spectrum, are you sensitive?
Am
I sensitive? Are you extra sensitive?
Yeah, I am sensitive. I've always been like that. But I mean, I don't know if that's my personality. I don't know. I don't know what that has. You know, I think that, you know, my son is very sensitive too. You know, my 9-year-old. And I suppose I'm very emphatic. You know, people say autistic people don't have empathy a lot of the time. And I don't think that's true either. I think that we have sometimes, you know, we feel very deeply. And sometimes that can affect us and we can shut down. Mm. Sometimes people with autism or Asperger's have problems reading people, you know, sensing if they're upset and things like that. But we do feel, and I'm a very, very much into human rights and equality and all that kind of thing, and I've always been very passionate about that as well. And so, yeah, I am sensitive.
I have to say, I'm enjoying talking to you. Yeah. Before I go on to talk to Pat, and Pat, you're being very patient, so thank you.
Oh, thank you.
We wanted to hear Fiona's story first, and I think you understand that. I want you to mention your talk that's going to take place on the 8th of April.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm giving a lecture with my lecturer, Kirsten Hurley. She's the lecturer in my course on females on the spectrum. And it's a free lecture. It's open to the public. So the 8th of April at 3:00 in UCC. And I just want, you know, everyone's welcome, women, men, professionals, anybody, advocates, organisations, just to try and, you know, get the message out there about females, I suppose. And, you know, people are welcome to ask questions. And like I said, the group, the Facebook group I have, it's called FASI. It's Female Asperger Autism Support Ireland. It's growing every day. And what I really want, Derek, is eventually is to have on-the-ground groups for women, you know, where they can come and get support and talk and meet up and, you know, have somewhere to talk about their issues or how they feel. And so that's my aim for this, really, is to try and develop a broader thing for women in Ireland with autism.
There used to be Valium.
Yeah, I know, you can't get that anymore, can you?
No, the doctors willy-nilly, from what I can remember as a child, used to dish out Valium to women. I remember the neighbour next door, the chimney went on fire one morning. I just remember it clearly. Yeah. And the other woman down the road, and my mother went out, and the other woman came, oh, do you want some Valium? Well, that wasn't going to put the fire out.
It's like,
do you want a fire brigade? But that was I was convinced that everybody of a certain age on our road was on Valium.
Mother's Little Helper, they called it, didn't they? It was like the Rolling Stones song. See, it's just, I mean.
But I just wonder if they were alive today. Mm. Now, my mother died last year. In her 80s, and those women are dead, and they all would have been the same age. If they had been tested.
Yeah. Maybe.
You know, would some of their issues, their anxieties and their other problems be related to something else?
Yeah,
you just wonder. I'm only wondering out loud now.
No, I mean, it is. And it's very interesting. Like I said, you know, the group that I have, the women in there are all, you know, we're all talking about the same issues, really. We have a huge, it's amazing, actually. I mean, I was talking to a woman last night before I came on here who's going to be diagnosed tomorrow. She's going for an assessment. So, I mean, it's a very positive thing that women are starting to be able to talk about these things. And that's why I went public, really, because I just felt that I needed to do that because there was nothing for me. You know, when I got diagnosed, there was no help group, support group, anywhere I could talk about how I felt and what affected me for the last 42 years. So, I mean, I just want something that is maybe there for women, you know, and this lecture hopefully will bring more awareness and more support in that area so everyone's welcome to come.
It will. And we'll put the details on our website. So Fiona, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks a million, Derek.
And very best of luck. The details are on our website. It's taking place on the 8th of April. And Pat, we'll talk to you after the break and news headlines.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye.
Well done, that lady. My daughter is autistic and she doesn't need to be cured or rehabilitated. Great to hear different voices talk about autism for a change on RTE. What a fantastic autism interview. I have two healthy children, thank God. I know people who have children who have autism and the work they have to do with their kids is unbelievable. It is incredibly difficult on families. We really do need to raise awareness on this issue and help parents and kids who have this condition. Well done, says Julie. Derek, asking about a cure. Your broken leg analogy is missing the lady's point. Would you ask a gay person if he/she would opt for the cure? Ask Sean, who's listening in Rialto. Well, the answer to that is, Sean, yes, I would. Yes, I have. And I have been asked myself, if you really want to know. And the answer has been no, I wouldn't like a cure. I was just asking if you had a situation, if you had a condition, if you were suffering, stressed, suffering anxiety because of a situation in your life and you could have it relieved, would you not opt for that? And you clearly heard Fiona say, no, she is happy with the person she is and I am happy with the person I am. But it's still a valid question. I was only asking, and I have asked it, yeah, and I have been asked it as well. Derek, congratulations to that wonderful mother. She has a fantastic approach and attitude. I have a child with another rare condition called neurofibromatosis. Unfortunately, very little is known about it, and only for a very kind and committed support group in Dublin, I would have very little support indeed. So thank you. Derek, you can be a crabby old thing sometimes. What? Crabby old thing? Me? Maybe. Okay. But you're great. Always listen to you. And that was a wonderful interview, says Mary. Well, thank you, Mary. I take that. So we take the knocks. We also take the nice praise as well. So thank you. Now, a while ago, we received an email into our Mooney inbox, and we had to do a double take when we saw the subject line. It said, Murray goes wild. And we thought, it must be a mistake. Perhaps someone was confusing John Murray with Derek Mooney. Could it happen? But it proved to be correct. It was just a play on words. Murray is actually Murray Hooley. He's a 15-year-old teenager with autism, and he and his assistant's dog, Clive, have been writing a blog for the last 6 years. It has followers all over the world, I'm glad to say, and Murray's mum, Fiona, wrote in to tell us about their blog post, Murray Goes Wild, all about the frogs in their pond. Now you get it. So we decided to pay them a visit at their home in Fox Rock in Dublin, and it was very timely as yesterday was World Autism Day, and we'll talk more about that with Pat Matthews in just a while. Katrina met best friends Murray and Clive, and first of all, Murray showed her his collection of ornaments from all around the world.
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me.
That is the windmill from Holland, the Burj Khalifa from Dubai. Lat gave me this Christ the Redeemer from Rio de Janeiro, and Filippo gave me the Trevi Fountain from Italy.
How do you know Vlad and Filippo? Where did you meet them?
They're friends from my blog and Clive's blog too.
Brilliant. Now this is Clive. Clive is a beautiful dog. What type of a dog is he, Murray?
He's a golden doodle.
And what age is he?
8 years old.
And he's quite big, isn't he? He's nearly up to your hip bone there. He's quite a tall dog, isn't he? Very strong.
Yeah, very strong, tall dog.
And tell me a little bit about your friendship with Clive. What kind of things do you do together?
I bring him for walks, throw tennis balls for Clive. I give him his dinner at night. I give him crusts when I mean my pizza.
But he doesn't come to school with you?
No.
So that's the only time you're separated?
That is the only time that I'm separated.
Now, do you remember when you first got Clive?
When I was 7, I got Clive when he was 1 year old.
And so what does Clive do for you? Is he just a companion, or does he actually help you do things?
He actually helps me do things.
Oh, like what?
Like working, going shopping, going to the cinema, going to the zoo.
Now, is he your dog, or is he the family dog, would you say?
He's my dog.
Only yours?
Yeah, only mine.
Now let's talk to your mum. Now, Fiona, this is a great collection of ornaments that you have here. These have all come from people that you've met online through your blog.
Yeah, it's incredible. I suppose people just interact with Murray and Clive. They like the story of Murray and Clive. And because we have literally blogging friends all around the world, and Murray is so interested in collecting little ornaments, people keep sending us presents.
Oh, so you've got a great collection here. Now, tell me a little bit about Clive coming into your lives, first of all.
I suppose we have Clive now 8 years, so it's kind of hard to remember before Clive. But in the last 8 years, we have done so much, and Murray has progressed so much, and a huge amount of that we put down to the friendship that he has and has developed with Clive.
And how did you hear about autism assistance dogs?
We read an article in the Irish Times many, many moons ago, and the programme had just started in Ireland, and we were actually one of the first to apply for the programme and one of the very first people in the country to get an assistance dog.
So when he came into your lives 8 years ago, he was only a little puppy. Did he have to be trained? And what kind of a help is he around the house?
Well, we actually got him fully trained. Guide dogs, they have puppy walkers who train the dogs for the first 12 months. Then they go back down to Cork and they kind of go to training school there. It's like kind of going to secondary school. And then at about 1 year, 18 months, you get the dog fully trained back into the house. So when Clive came, he was trained, which was wonderful. Great benefit having a fully trained dog. And literally, I suppose the bond between the boys was apparent from day one. It calmed Murray, it relaxed Murray, and it enabled Murray to go out and go to places that previously he didn't want to go.
Like where?
Well, we used to have an issue with supermarkets, you know, anywhere that was busy, trying to go to Dundrum, trying to go to McDonald's, cinema, anywhere there was a lot of people, a lot of noise, Murray just wasn't comfortable. But once he had the dog, and it was incredible, because at the time, I mean, Murray now is great and he can explain all about the dog, but you know, 8 years ago, he couldn't. It just worked. And once he went out with the dog, we'd no problems.
Now, you emailed us in to tell us about your blog post, Murray Goes Wild, and it was all about the frogs and the frog spawn you had in your pond. Murray, do you still have any of the frogs or the frog spawn in your pond?
I still have those frogs that were mating.
Okay, can we go out and have a look at your pond? Is that okay, guys?
Yes, okay.
Okay. Are you coming too, Clive? So this is your lovely pond, and I don't see any mating frogs, but I do see quite a lot of frog spawn in there. Now, you wrote into us, Fiona, saying that Murray and Clive were fascinated by the frogs.
Yeah, we had a great 4 days here. It started one morning, we looked out, we could actually hear the frogs, and the boys came out and they were absolutely fascinated. So they spent literally 4 days, it was lovely mild weather, and they sat here at the edge of the pond watching all the frogs mating. Murray loves taking photographs, so he took fab photos, and we had taken so many great photos of the frogs that we decided, well, you know, it was Murray going wild. So we sent them in to Derek just to show him what the frogs were up to in our pond.
Oh, well, the photos were terrific, and with your permission, we're going to put them up on our website, rte.ie/Mooney, so everybody can have a look at them, because they are truly, truly terrific. Now, animals is a big thing for you, isn't it, Murray? You love animals.
Yeah, I love animals so much. I've always dreamed of working with the giraffes at the giraffe house.
Well, will we go back inside? I know it's a little bit chilly out here. Now, with the blog as well, you have actually travelled to meet some of the people that you've met online.
Yeah, we have. Particularly, I think Americans are fantastic for getting involved in blogging and wanting to kind of, you know, do things for you. So we have some fantastic pals in America, and we have a friend who invited us to New York. We have another pal asked us to go down and visit her in South Carolina.
And when you say pal, these are all people online that you've never really met.
I mean, what was incredible was, you know, the lady in South Carolina, she had never met us in person. And she said, here's my holiday home, you know, come over, and would you like to spend 3 weeks in my house in South Carolina? So we arrived, and it was incredible. I mean, we could have been anybody, but she was really happy, and I was bringing the dog, and not a problem, and we had fantastic, and we have kept in touch. We've been over to see her several times. It's amazing.
Dogs like Clive are obviously very valuable to a family and to Murray. Obviously, they have a great big bond. Is it easy for anybody to get an autism assistance dog if they want one?
No, I suppose the problem is, because the programme has worked so well, unfortunately at the moment, although there are 3 different charities providing the dogs in Ireland, I know there's huge waiting lists, and Irish Guide Dogs, who provided us with Clive 8 years ago, their list is actually again closed at the moment.
And what happens now? Clive came to you fully trained, and does he have a working lifespan? How does that work?
He does, and I suppose, unfortunately, Clive will be 9 next month, so he's kind of coming to the end of his working life. We'll probably get another year. The dog does need to retire. You know, he has put a huge amount in. He's out with us all the time. So in fairness to the dog, he needs time just to kind of retire and be a pet dog.
And so what happens then? Do you have to go back on the waiting list for another dog, or how does that work?
Well, at the moment, I suppose when the programme started, it was initially for young children between the ages of 4 and 10. There wasn't an adolescent assistance dog programme. We would very much like to see one. I suppose we have seen the huge benefits of having Clive for the last 8 years, and the idea now that Clive will retire in perhaps a year's time and we won't have a dog to work with Murray. I mean, that's something...
Somebody just come to your front door.
I think that might be Murray's sister coming home. But that's something that worries us hugely, that, you know, we won't have a working dog with us anymore. When he does retire, you know, his jacket everything goes back to guide dogs, and he becomes our dog. We can adopt him, you know, will become a family pet, but he won't be working, so he won't have public access, so we won't be flying with him and we won't be doing all the great things that we have been doing, which will be hard on Murray to understand, and it'll be difficult on Clive. Yeah,
and there's no opportunity to go on any sort of a list at the moment to try and get a replacement dog,
a successor dog.
Successor dog.
No, I suppose, you know, within the visually impaired world, a guide dog owner can look for a successor dog. At the moment, for assistance dogs, there aren't successor dogs. We would very much like to see one. I suppose it's a new program, but we would like to think that there would be a successor dog. Certainly, it's not every family that would want one for their child with autism, but in Murray's case, having seen the benefits and his dependence and his continued dependence on the dog, we really want one going forward.
Well, guys, thank you very much for allowing me to visit this evening. I had an absolutely lovely time. And can I just say to you both, happy World Autism Day.
Happy World Autism Day.
And very importantly, make sure you buy your blue nose and wear it to celebrate World Autism Day.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
You got a friend. RTE Radio 1.
Pat Matthews is executive director of the Irish Society for Autism. Now, Pat, you were listening to Fiona earlier and you agree with almost everything she said.
Yeah, I think when you're speaking to people who have Asperger syndrome, it is fascinating because they look at the world in a different way. Professor Michael Fitzgerald does a lot of work in the Asperger field, particularly in relation to creative people. And he's always said that the world would be a much poorer place if we didn't have people with Asperger syndrome.
He's right.
Yeah. But they do contribute a lot. But there are a significant number of children with autism who won't have those abilities. And these are the ones that we really got to concentrate on as well.
And do as much as we can to help. What's your interest in autism?
Parent. We have a son called John.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was the late 60s when he was diagnosed, when very little was known about autism. But we were lucky. We were in London at the time and we got to see Professor Michael Rutter in the Maudsley, who was the number one in Europe at that stage. So he was diagnosed quite early. He had a lot of intervention and support. He went to an autism-specific school. In those days.
Here in Ireland?
No, in the UK.
Yeah, no, in London. So you were living in the UK at the time, were you?
We were in the
UK. I'm sorry, go on. Yeah.
It's when we returned to Ireland that we found
nothing.
Pretty poor. Nothing.
Yeah.
So that began our crusade. Our son was a Kanner type child. He still has no speech. Doesn't mean he can't communicate.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need speech to communicate. He has a quality of life that is quite high in spite of his autism. And he has enriched an awful lot of people's lives. We look at him as a contributor, not as a user, as some people want to classify people.
As a what?
A user of services, you know, service users.
Mm.
The hairs in the back of my neck stand up when I hear that.
Yeah.
These are people who can make significant contributions to society if they're allowed to do so. That's why we have a Charter of Rights, which we had the European Parliament approve many, many years ago. So things have improved tremendously in Ireland, particularly in education. The big deficit we have now is that children with autism, people with autism, are coming out of the educational system with nowhere to go because we haven't planned for their continuing existence. We've ignored their adulthood.
Mm.
And for services in adulthood for people with autism, it's very bleak at the moment. There is an autism bill. It's a little bogged down in the Dáil at the moment, which calls for an autism strategy to be implemented for adults. It calls for a data bank to be set up so that we know what the future, how many children into the future we will need to provide for. Unfortunately, hasn't moved yet. 3 weeks ago in the north of Ireland, the Minister for Health announced an autism strategy for the North. Very good one. One exists in Wales for the past 10 years. In the UK, they have an autism strategy. But here we seem to think that we don't need one.
You're saying you need a strategy for adulthood.
Yes.
But should it not start earlier than that? Should the intervention not be there immediately? For example, are there schools for people with autism to attend where they get the one-on-one care that they desperately need?
Early intervention is essential. Therefore, diagnosis must come first. Education has made tremendous strides until we hit the recession. And then the cutbacks began and the numbers of classroom assistants dropped. The number of CNOs dropped. The big problem we have in our Irish schools is teacher training. Unless you really know what you're dealing with, how can you teach a child with autism? Mm-hmm. You've really got to become autistic like yourself, get down to their level and meet them face to face. Work with them and encourage them. It's all about interaction. Nothing is going to happen fast. We run training courses for teachers and we get a lot of feedback. And the teachers always highlight the difference even 2 half-day courses have made to their life in the classroom and how the dynamics in the classroom has changed significantly. Because of the training.
But do they know if they have autistic children in the classroom?
Most of these classrooms are set up where you have a cluster of 6 children with autism. The Department of Education will open a new classroom in the primary school system. So you'll have a classroom with 6 children with autism. You'll have a teacher. You'll have maybe 2 classroom assistants. That's fine if those 3 people in that classroom have a knowledge of autism. Mm. It's not fine where they don't. That's where the gap is in education.
But should somebody with autism not be integrated into the broader school population?
Yeah, but that's the aim.
Is that not better long term for them when they become adults?
Of course it is. Yeah, but that's the start off. Is to get the child to a state where they can integrate and where they will be integrated into the mainstream school. That's the objective of this, the classrooms.
Okay.
Because they are mixing with their peers during play breaks and everything else. It's just because they interpret information differently. In the early years, they cannot make it in a classroom without assistance. It's this assistance that's necessary. Mm. With that, you will have a percentage of children who, in spite of that education, are going to need significant help in adulthood. That's where we don't have a plan. And we're not likely to unless the autism bill is passed.
All right, so you say there's a plan in Wales and there's a plan in England. What do they do? And are they doing it or is it just a plan?
In Wales, they've got what they call employment ambassadors who are out in the local community with prospective employers, talking to employers, talking to people with autism and matching the two together. Mm. So they are actively seeking ways of integrating people with autism into the workforce.
Now, are these, in inverted commas, proper jobs?
They are proper jobs.
Not menial tasks?
No, they're not menial jobs. I think that people, particularly people with Asperger syndrome, can be a great asset to any employer, particularly in the IT world. They just contribute so much. Mm-hmm. Michael Fitzgerald says, if we didn't have Asperger people, you could close down Silicon Valley. People with autism can make meaningful contributions in spite of their autism.
Pat, thank you very much indeed. And we've got an email here that says, well done to Murray, Fiona and Clive, the assistance dog. We too have an assistance dog and his name is Edwin. And he is a wonderful member of our family and such a great friend and helper to our 9-year-old son, Cian. Hi, Derek, your programme is always varied and interesting and you're not afraid to give sometimes strongly held views, but this only makes it more relevant to real life, says Dave in Dublin. And I suppose on that subject. Now, that was a great interview with Murray. What an incredible spread of great people you had on the spectrum today. Great for people to learn more about both, says Colin. Derek, as a mother of a wonderful son who has autism, I would say that it was a good question. Would you like a cure for autism? In a heartbeat, I would love a cure and my son could have all the wonderful experiences his sister has and he would still have his gorgeous smile. So different things for different people. But at any rate, we hope that we brought some awareness to autism today. I know yesterday was World Autism Day, but we decided that it would all happen one day and then that would be the end of it and we would do it today. So there you go.